Do you have any knowledge of vessels departing the vessel traffic system, vessel traffic scheme, to within, say, a mile of Busby Island Light? Based on your own experience and knowledge?
Based upon my own experience, no. Of course, what the vessel does to maneuver through the ice before it embarks a pilot and after it disembarks a pilot, I really can't say, but I have not personally had that experience.
Just reframe my notes for just for a moment. Captain Murphy, are you under the impression, one way or the other, whether vessels are tracked or not in Valdez Arm by the vessel traffic system?
My impression is that they are. My understanding is that they are tracked.
And to what point in Valdez Arm are they tracked, say, going outbound?
My understanding is to the area of Bly Reef Buoy.
If you were aware of severe ice conditions, a hypothetical question now, if you were aware of severe ice conditions that would necessitate your going outside the traffic separation scheme, how close to Busby Island Light do you believe you could come?
I believe that I would personally be uncomfortable if I were inside a mile off of Busby Island Light. I wouldn't like it.
Are there any unknowns about the bottom in that vicinity? Is the bottom pretty well surveyed?
Well, I believe it's pretty well surveyed. There is a caution on all of the Prince William Sound charts as a result of the 1964 earthquake that there's the bottom has either subsided or risen in areas of Prince William Sound, some of which haven't been resurveyed. However, I believe that the charts of Valdez Port and Arm, I believe the surveys are generally accurate.
You know of no anomalies that are not on the chart in the area of Bly Reef Buoy?
None that I'm aware of.
Or I should say in the area between Busby Island Light and Bly Reef.
No, sir, I'm aware of none.
Do you have any personal knowledge of the extent of ice on the evening the Exxon Valdez grounded?
No, sir, I don't. I did not observe ice either visually or by radar that night.
Captain Murphy, I'll be that's all the questions I have this time regarding the accident. I believe Mr. Sager has some questions.
Yes, sir. Captain Murphy, were either of the radars set so that you could have observed ice in the area where it was reported?
Both radars, as far as I know, are operating perfectly.
Was the range set so that you could detect that ice? Was the ice within that range where it has been?
Well, yes, the radars have a capability of scanning the area where the ice was said to exist and beyond. And I customarily use the range feature of the radar quite a lot. And if you're asking, did I scan that area with the radar? I did. I did not observe any ice by radar. That, by the way, is not unusual.
Right. Well, that's what I was asking. Over the 7 or 8 years that you've known Captain Hazelwood, have you had an opportunity to observe his navigation skills and ship handling skills?
not ship handling skills, except to the extent that he handles a vessel while embarking the pilot. I've observed his seamanship and his demeanor as a master on a number of occasions, however.
And how would you characterize that seamanship?
I would characterize it as outstanding.
Could you characterize his operating style? Is he very methodical? Or is he very deliberate? Is he very quick? Could you give us something that would characterize his style?
No, I really can't answer in those terms. I can give you an anecdote that might demonstrate that. A number of years ago, I was piloting his ship outbound through Valdez Narrows. We were making, it was a winter night with very limited visibility. I had the con. I was making the course change on Potato Point, and we were accelerating the vessel. I told the quartermaster to study up on a particular course. The quartermaster applied the helm the wrong way, and instead of putting on counter rudder, he steered into the course change, chased a compass, is the slang, and the vessel, the loaded vessel, was rapidly swinging toward the beach. Captain Hazelwood picked up that mistake even before I did and corrected it immediately. So he was on the ball.
Did you make arrangements to meet with Captain Hazelwood at some time after the ship docked at the berth?
Yes, sir, we did. He suggested we have lunch the following day. I said that sounded fine, that my schedule was free. He suggested, or he told me that he was going to go ashore the following day to make some telephone calls, and that he would call me from town, probably from the agents, and we would meet for lunch.
Okay. And did you, in fact, meet for lunch?
Yes, sir.
About what time was that, do you recall?
That was around the noon hour or shortly thereafter, 12:15, 12:30.
And where did you meet with him?
He telephoned me. He told me he was calling from his agent's office, Alaska Maritime Agencies, and would I come pick him up there? I did that. I picked him up and two other gentlemen, and we went down to the Pizza Palace and had lunch.
And who were the other two gentlemen?
The chief engineer and whom I recognized, and another gentleman who was introduced to me as the radio electronics officer.
Did it appear that they were drinking when you met them?
No, sir. They gave no such appearance.
How long did you remain at the Pizza Palace?
I think about an hour.
Did anyone drink any alcoholic beverages at that time?
Yes.
Did Captain Hazelwood?
No, sir. Nor did I.
What happened after you had lunch with Captain Hazelwood, and the radio officer and the chief engineer?
Captain Hazelwood asked me if I would drop him off at a local variety store. The name escapes me right now. It's in the Valdez Market complex. I dropped he and his party off there and proceeded back to my quarters.
That would have been about an hour after you arrived at the Pizza Palace.
Yes, an hour to an hour and a half, somewhere in that range.
When did you next see Captain Hazelwood?
I saw him that evening when he appeared in the wheelhouse of the Exxon Valdez.
Did he appear to have been drinking when you met him in the pilot house?
He gave no such appearance. I smelled liquor on his breath, or what I associate with the smell of liquor.
By no such appearance, what would you be referring to?
He appeared to me to be normal in all respects, much as he had that afternoon and the evening before.
No mood changes?
None that I could detect.
Speech was clear?
Yes, it was.
When you returned to the pilot house, after you had requested that he come up before you got off the ship?
Yes.
Did he appear any differently?
No, sir, he didn't.
Did you overhear a conversation between the master and the agent on the radio while you were piloting the vessel?
I don't recall that specific conversation, but I can say it probably occurred. It's a routine, it's protocol, if you will. After a vessel leaves the berth, there's a conversation between the vessel's agent and the master or a deck officer, giving the agent certain information that is required. So that transmission probably took place. I don't specifically recall having heard it.
When you saw him, when he came back up to the pilot house, did you have any clue as to what he might have been doing while he was below?
No, this is when he came up just prior to me
disembarking. Just before you disembarked, yes.
No, sir, I don't know what he was doing.
Didn't appear to have been sleeping?
No, it's dark in the pilot house, but I noticed no change.
And did you smell alcohol in his breath at that time?
Yes.
Did the odor change from the time that he had come on the vessel?
Not that I could detect.
Have you had any formal training in recognizing alcoholic intoxication?
Have I?
Yes.
No, I have not.
Did it occur to you when Captain Hazelwood returned to the bridge that you might have to take some action in the interest of vessel safety?
Absolutely not.
If you had some concern, this is speculative, of course, but if you had some concern and you called the vessel traffic controller and said, I'm about to disembark from the Exxon Valdez, the master has alcohol in his breath, what do you think would have happened? What would have been the response?
I really don't know.
Would they have taken you seriously?
I Mr. Sager, I really can't speculate on that. That kind of a situation has never occurred in my experience, and I really don't know what would happen.
Okay. Would you refer to the chart behind you?
Yes.
And identify the position where the last fix was taken off Busby Island, 2355.
I don't know where the last fix was taken. I had already disembarked from the vessel.
Within a mile, due west of Busby Island.
You want me to identify a position due west of Busby Island?
Yes.
There is a testimony now from the pilot of the Exxon Valdez pointing out to a point just to the west of Busby Island Light, about a mile away.
Would safely negotiate Bligh Reef to the west?
You're asking me to speculate on how to extricate a vessel from a situation where I wasn't present, and I can't do that.
Well, is it within the maneuvering capabilities of the vessel?
I would, in my opinion, yes, it is.
Would it require a full right rudder to extricate?
From the 2355 position?
If action was taken immediately, yes.
I think not. It depends upon the speed of the vessel, what course the vessel was steering, the weather conditions, the draft and trim of the vessel, and so on. These general questions are very hard to answer precisely.
If the vessel were traveling on a course of 180 degrees, we're traveling at 12 knots.
Yes.
And the point of the grounding is perhaps 3.5 miles or so to the south. What I'm trying to determine is, within the maneuvering characteristics that you're familiar with on the vessel, would it be difficult to extricate from that situation?
In my opinion, no. That's from the 2355 fix.
Exactly.
In my opinion, no, it would not be a problem.
Why is it desirable for the captain to remain on the bridge when you're transiting in a critical navigation area?
When the pilot's aboard?
Yes, when the pilot's aboard.
In my opinion, it's important for a number of reasons. I feel more comfortable because if anything goes wrong with the mechanical or electronic equipment on the ship, that the captain is usually much more familiar with than I am. He's there to handle it immediately. If he sees me doing something with his vessel that he's uncomfortable with, he can alert me immediately. And since he has ultimate command and responsibility, it's just a more comfortable situation when I'm handling his ship in a critical navigation area that he be there.
When you left the vessel, did anyone disembark with you?
No, sir.
To your knowledge, was there anyone else aboard the vessel for the outbound passage other than the crew?
To my knowledge, no.
How did you learn that, or gain the expectation that the vessel traffic controllers were tracking vessels as far as Bligh Reef?
Probably as a result of my many years of piloting here, it's known by the pilots and the vessels that is done. Presumably, that's the reason for one of the reasons for having a vessel traffic system and radar monitoring.
Have you ever smelled liquor on the breath of Captain Hazelwood before?
No, sir. Not that I can recall.
While he was on duty. And in your opinion, is it unusual for the captain to be absent from the wheelhouse during a passage through a critical navigation area such as through the Narrows?
I would say it's not typical.
That's all I have. Thank you very much.
Before I go to the part you're saying it's not typical that a master be on the bridge, or not typical that he not be on the bridge? Maybe I misunderstood. What's your answer to that question?
I'm sorry. I didn't hear you correctly.
I think Mr. Sager, will you repeat your question, please?
Is it unusual for a master to be absent from the bridge when the vessel is transiting in a critical navigation area?
My answer was it's not typical.
It's not typical.
Thank you.
So there we've heard from William Murphy, who was the pilot of the vessel, clearly wanted to defend Joe Hazelwood, said that this was the only time he had ever smelled liquor on his breath.
Several times, yes.
Several times. Did you notice any differences between the captain on this last voyage and your experiences with him previously?
Well, I noticed that he was older, like we all are. I hadn't seen Captain I hadn't seen Captain Hazelwood in a number of years since he had. I was told that he had been transferred to either the East or Gulf Coast to a vessel in that trade. And I had not seen him or been pilot with him since before he was transferred, and I want to say that's 4 or 5 years ago.
That would have been probably after 1985, however, or about that time?
I don't know. It's I hadn't seen Capitol Hazelwood, again, about 4, possibly 5 years. This was the first time I'd seen it.
Okay, and you said, I believe, you saw nothing unusual about his behavior or comportment on the bridge?
No, sir, nothing at all.
With the exception that you did smell alcohol on his breath?
That's correct.
How many times in your 17 years of piloting have you smelled alcohol on a master's breath?
I haven't counted. It happens once in a while.
I hate to be picky, but I mean, a couple times a year, or a couple times a month, or once in a blue moon, or...
Rarely. I really can't tell you how often. It's not something that happens on a regular basis.
Does it surprise you whenever it happens?
Not particularly.
Okay, thank you, sir. Several answers to Mr. Woody's questions, you referred to a short time. Captain's absent from the bridge for a short time. Could you define that a little better for us, please, sir?
In terms of how, duration of time?
A short time, how many minutes is that, or less than how many minutes?
Well, it varies probably depending upon what the captain has to do, of anywhere from 30 seconds to 5 or perhaps 10 minutes, probably on the shorter side.
That's fine. Talk just a minute about the relationship between the master and his pilots, yourself. Is it important for the individual pilots to maintain the master's goodwill?
I don't know about goodwill. I think it's important to maintain the master's confidence. It's important to remember that the master is always in command and ultimately responsible for his ship, and the pilot is his subordinate. The pilot may be in charge of the navigation of the vessel through a pilotage area, but always under the command of the master. The pilot is a professional, but he is essentially hired help under the command of the master. The master is always in command. So it's a relationship one hopes of mutual confidence and professional respect.
So have you known of any of your brother pilots in this trade ever being essentially changing their rotation because they had irritated a master on a particular ship?
That has happened upon occasion.
When you spoke with Mr. Woody earlier regarding how visible the Bligh Reef buoy was on radar, would installation of a Raycon in that site change that appreciably?
Yes, I think it would.
Okay. We learned earlier that Mr. Cousins does not have something called a pilotage endorsement for Prince William Sound. Do you feel that the knowledge gained in order to pass the test and receive that endorsement is important knowledge? Is this a hard endorsement to get, or is it merely a matter of paperwork?
I think it can be important, and in some cases, it's not important. An individual could be perfectly capable of safely navigating that area without that particular endorsement on his license. Another person could have that particular endorsement and not be capable. However, as a test of a person's local knowledge, as reproduced on an examination, it's important. Yes.
Do you feel it's important that vessels within the Prince William Sound area have two deck officers at the bridge at all times?
Yes and no. Coming on the approaches to Prince William Sound outside of Hinchinbrook entrance and through Hinchinbrook entrance, I would say it's important. Probably from Bligh Reef North, it would be important between Hinchinbrook entrance and Bligh Reef. The sound is wide open. It's perhaps 20 miles across with no dangers. So as a practical and safety matter, I can't say that in terms of safety that would be necessary in that particular section of the sound. In other parts of the sound, I would say yes, it is necessary.
Okay. Regarding your anecdote about how Captain Hazelwood saw a mistake by the helmsman before you did and corrected it quickly, do you recall who the helmsman was at that time?
No, sir, I don't. That was a number of years ago.
Do you recall whether you ever saw that helmsman at the helm of a vessel after that occasion?
Please repeat.
Do you recall whether you ever saw that particular individual helmsman at the helm of a vessel after that occurred?
Dr. Reich, I think he already said he didn't remember who the helmsman was.
How could he remember some scene subsequent to
that? I'm sorry, Mr. Chairman. I thought he maybe meant he didn't remember his name, but okay. Okay, what the helmsman did in your anecdote was turn the wrong direction, basically,
No, the vessel was turning to starboard.
Okay.
And instead of applying port rudder to steady the vessel up on the ordered course, the helmsman applied starboard rudder, which would have continued the turn. He was chasing the compass.
Was to check the swing of the
correct
vessel.
Correct.
Uh-huh. Not an ordered course change, per se.
That's right.
Okay. Is that an unusual occurrence? Do helmsmen do this regularly?
Yes, it's something that probably happens to every pilot a few times in his career, but it's unusual.
Okay. Thank you. Were there any discrepancies in the response of this vessel, the Exxon Valdez, to any of your rudder commands?
There were none.
Steering was responding properly?
Yes, sir, it was.
Okay. How do you reconcile your assessment of Captain Hazelwood as someone of outstanding seamanship skills with the fact that he was absent from the bridge during transit of the Narrows on this particular occasion?
Well, my opinion of his seamanship skills is based upon my experience with him prior to the events of 23rd of March.
So you give your opinion on his seamanship skills, that is, his technical ability, correct me if I'm wrong, but not on his management ability, if you will, or his explicit following of policies and regulations?
I would have no knowledge of either of those areas.
Okay. Finally, Captain Murphy, did you notice any, quote, trouble with the third mate while you were on board the vessel at this transit?
You mean anything out of the ordinary?
Yes.
I noticed none.
Okay. Thank you, sir.
Sir.
Is that it, Dr. LaRisha? Okay. Commander Waldron?
Captain and Captain, seeing you again.
Commander.
Couple of questions about the ice. You stated that when you looked on the radar, you did not see any ice on the, was it the 10 centimeter radar?
I believe I used both radars during the outbound transit. I didn't observe any ice on either radar.
Okay. Would you explain the difference between a 10 centimeter and a 3 centimeter radar as far as picking up an object such as ice?
Normally, under optimum atmospheric conditions, in other words, on a clear day, a three centimeter radar will pick up smaller objects at a closer distance than will a 10. On the other hand, the 10 centimeter radar has a longer wavelength. It's normally more powerful. I prefer them in Alaska because they're much less likely to be adversely affected by precipitation and snow. So normally, if I can, I use the 10 centimeter radar. Does that answer your question?
Yes, thank you. On the chart in front of you, third mate drew out a cone shape coming out of Columbia Glacier area.
Yes.
Indicating where he saw the ice that evening on radar. Were you able to see on the 10 centimeter or the 3 centimeter radar that far south?
Yes.
Did you see any ice in that area?
I did not.
You had brought the vessel in the previous evening?
Yes.
Was there any ice in that area then?
There was quite a lot.
In the area marked by the chart?
Yes.
Marked on the chart?
Yes.
What type of ice was it?
I only observed it by radar, not visually. The radar echoes were quite strong. There were a lot of them.
What type of ice was it?
I only observed it by radar, not visually. The radar echoes were quite strong. There were a lot of them. Based upon just on the radar picture, I would have described it as probably pretty heavy ice across both lanes.
Did you divert out of the lane to avoid the ice?
No. The ice was to the southwest of the pilot station. In other words, the ship had already transited through the ice area when I got on.
Okay. Have you had occasion during that time period to pick up a vessel at Rocky Point?
I don't understand
the
question.
I'm sorry, at Bly Reef, at the state pilot station at Bly Reef.
Well, the state pilot station is at Busby Island, but so I'm unsure what your question is.
During that few weeks that you were on duty as a pilot, did you pick up any vessels or depart from any vessels down on the Bly Reef area?
Yes, I did.
Did you encounter ice during those trips?
As I recall, as you're aware, the pipeline and shipping was shut down for a number of days. When we started moving ships again, I don't recall the ice being a particular problem. I'm a bit unsure of that recollection, though. I just don't remember.
How about prior to the grounding? Do you recall transiting that area?
No, sir. No, I don't.
The other pilots on duty during the time that you were, did they ever mention problems with ice in the Bly Reef area?
I really don't recall.
After you departed on the pilot boat, did anyone else on the pilot boat watch the progress of the Exxon Valdez, to your knowledge?
No, it was an entirely routine transit and disembarking. The pilot boat makes about 22 knots, and it was a calm night, so it was making all that speed, and we have about something less than 2 miles to go to get to our cove, and the boat is headed away from the ship, so I may have looked back at the ship once, and the only thing visible is its navigation lights. The operator of the boat was directing his attention ahead, so the answer is no.
Okay, good. Do you know if this vessel has a fathometer alarm?
I do not know that it does. I presume it does, but I don't have personal knowledge of it.
Have you had occasion to speak to the master of this vessel or other vessels concerning what the setting is on the fathometer alarm?
I have used the fathometer alarm on a number of other vessels here in Cook Inlet and other places. I have adjusted the setting myself or asked the mate on watch to adjust it. I don't know if there was one on the Exxon Valdez or if there was one, if it was set at a particular depth setting.
What is a common depth setting for other vessels operating through the narrows and through Valdez Arm?
I don't think there is one. It would be unusual in my experience to set the fathometer alarm simply because Port Valdez and most of Valdez Arm is in excess of 100 fathoms in depth. And so normally, in my experience, the fathometer alarm is not set. It's too deep to worry about.
This vessel is a single screw, single rudder. Could you describe the maneuvering characteristics of a single screw ship versus a twin screw, twin rudder ship?
I think you have to be a little more specific. The Exxon Valdez is conventional in all respects. It's a fine handling ship.
This is a single screw ship. Does it turn to starboard or port any differently, or is it the same?
Normally, a single screw ship with a right-handed propeller will turn to port. Its turning circle will be slightly less than a turn to starboard. Not significantly less, however.
When you were having lunch with Captain Hazelwood, did he mention any problems that he may have been having, or any personal items that you'd like to that you could tell us about?
No, he didn't.
That's all I have. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Commander. Mr. Hallett.
Mr. Chairman, we have no questions at this time.
Thank you. Captain Deppe?
Mr. Chairman, we have no questions either.
Thank you. Captain Murphy, thank you for your time. Oh, I'm sorry, Lou. Mr. Colucciello.
Captain Murphy, who are the other members of the Alaska Board of, I believe you call them pilot commissioners, or I don't need to know their names, but what is their background?
It's the Alaska Board of Marine Pilots. There are two pilots. There are two representatives from steamship agencies. There are two public members, and there is one member from the State Department of Commerce and Economic Development.
And how long do they serve?
Normally, each member serves for a term of 4 years.
I see. You indicated that you have passed through ice areas, and have you ever struck the ice with the ships that you've been piloting?
Yes, but I've never struck a large piece of ice. There's big pieces of ice and small pieces of ice. It would be impossible to transit an area of ice without touching any ice cubes at all.
I see. So in the process, did you slow down because you knew you were going to hit them, but you thought you wouldn't have any damage?
Well, it depends upon the circumstances at the time, the visibility, the ice conditions, and the vessel in question. I've proceeded through the ice at full speed with no problem. At other times, I've felt it necessary to slow the ship down.
Mm-hmm. Well, I understand you earlier said that you didn't think that the ship should be slowed, say, meaning it low 5 to 6 knots in order to have sufficient maneuverability. Can you be caught in a situation where you shouldn't go below 6 knots, yet you should go below 6 knots because the ice is just too large and you don't want to hit it at that speed? I'm just wondering where you reach a situation where you're caught between the two limits.
I have not had that experience, so I can't really intelligently answer your question. I can see that that's possible. That has not been my experience.
Do you ever have a situation where two vessels are either outbound or inbound going through ice where there's a problem that one might suddenly stop or slow down? And do you take precautions to have the vessel that's following remain at a particularly long distance away so that you won't have one running into the other?
Yes, I believe it's a regulation, or at least a custom of the vessel traffic system to require that vessels following one another keep a distance of at least, I believe it's 2 miles, six. And normally when pilots are aboard or shipmasters, if the ship ahead is going to is going to decrease speed, that person will advise the ship astern of the speed decrease.
Where do the state waters, what is the limit of the outboard end of the state waters? Where do they begin?
Well, it's, I can't be precise without referring to the state publications, but at the ocean entrance to Prince William Sound, there are the exemptions for vessels. There are exemptions for vessels to enter inside the mandatory pilotage of waters of the state of Alaska. I believe the language is for the express purpose of embarking and disembarking a pilot.
Are the exemptions the same for all vessels? I'm talking now about tank ships that trade at Valdez, large tank ships. Does it make any difference, that is, whether the ships are foreign-flagged or U.S. flagged ships?
Yes, the state normally does not have authority over U.S. vessels on coastwise voyages. Those are referred to as enrolled vessels. U.S. vessels in foreign trade, which are called registered vessels, and foreign flagships, the state does have pilotage authority over those kinds of vessels. In addition, here in Alaska, the state has certain requirements for state pilots on tank ships, American tank ships, whether enrolled or registered, if they're in excess of 50,000 tons.
How many foreign tank ships regularly trade, at Valdez, do you know?
Yes, I believe there are about five or six.
And do you pilot them in any different manner than you pilot the U.S. flagships?
No, sir. We pick them up. They don't come up to where the old pilot station was in the Rocky Point area, Busby Island area. We pick them up off of Bligh Reef. That would be the only difference. And disembark them there also.
What is the rationale that one should be treated differently from the other?
Because they're what I believe the Coast Guard Vessel Traffic System refers to as non-pilotage vessels. That is, they're the same as an American vessel whose master does not possess the federal pilotage from Cape Hinchinbrook to the state pilot station. Those vessels, as well as the foreign ones you're asking me about, are permitted to come inside of Prince William Sound under certain conditions of visibility and certain reporting requirements. But they have to take before the accident, they had to take a pilot off of Bligh Reef. Now all vessels take a pilot southwest of Bligh Reef.
Well, then could you say that the distance that from Bligh Reef to Busby Island, that transit was in effect being conducted as a federal pilot, and then the rest of it was being conducted in the role of a state pilot? Or I'm confused as to, again, why the difference, and what is your role differently, or was the role differently, in that lower leg?
I really don't understand your question. There's really no difference in the function the pilot performs.
But was the requirement to pick up the foreign flagships at Bligh Reef, was that a state requirement or a Coast Guard requirement?
That was a Coast Guard requirement.
And is it then a state requirement to pick them up at when you pick up the vessel at Busby Island? Is that a state requirement or a federal?
That is both.
So is it true then that between Bligh Reef and Busby Island, that part of the transit, at least prior to the accident, was being done only because of the federal requirement?
Yes.
And during that leg, then, were you operating under your federal license or operating under your state license?
I really don't know. I think if it were on a foreign flag vessel, we would probably be operating under the authority of our state license, an American vessel under the authority of our federal license.
Mm-hmm. Are you familiar with the requirements that the Coast Guard has to get a pilotage endorsement for a ship's officer?
Yes, I am.
I'm wondering what are the contents of those requirements that would have been applicable or would have helped in this situation? Could you think of what those requirements are that might pertain specifically to the situation that occurred that evening of the accident?
I really don't understand your question.
Well, you said that you're familiar with the requirements to get such a pilotage endorsement. Do you know if the questions relate specifically to navigating in this particular area or ship handling under those particular circumstances? Are the requirements tailored so that some of them would have been helpful in this particular situation?
In my opinion, based on my knowledge of the exams, no.
Thank you. I have no more questions.
That was Lou Colucciello. He's the hearing officer.
I just have two questions. I think I heard you, or let me see if I heard you correctly. I think you said it's your understanding that the vessels are tracked to by the VTS to Bligh Reef?
That's always been my understanding, yes.
Okay. What is your understanding of when somebody says the vessel is tracked? What does that mean to you?
That means to me that someone is in the radar room of the vessel traffic system observing the transit of the vessel in the radar, and it could include plotting the position of the vessel.
It could include if the vessel, in your opinion, got outside of the traffic lane and is being tracked. Should some information be coming to the vessel from the VTS?
Yes, I believe that the boundaries of the traffic separation scheme are superimposed on the radar receiver, on the radar sets, the scopes in the vessel traffic system, and I suppose it's always been my presumption that if a vessel is straight outside of those boundaries, something would be said.
Do other pilots share that definition of tracking that you just expressed in your opinion, in your understanding?
In my opinion, yes, but of course you would have to ask them.
Understand.
I think so.
One other question I wanted to ask you, and I guess it was Dr. LaRiche asked you about, have you ever had the opportunity to notice any problems with whether it's alcohol or emotional problems or concerns of any other master on the bridge?
I'm not sure I understand the question, but...
Let me ask you more specifically. Have you ever... What would happen if you did notice a particular problem with a master before you departed the vessel or disembarked the vessel?
Well, that's never happened to me, fortunately. And since it hasn't, I really don't know what I'd do.
So if that opportunity arose, you don't know what you'd do?
No, I don't. It's a very difficult question. The master is in command of his ship, and when the vessel arrives at the end of its pilotage route, the pilot's job is finished, and what authority he has, which is the only authority he has, is under the authority of the master. That authority ends. His at the end of the route, I really don't know what I'd do. It would be a difficult situation.
But if you thought there was any danger or any concern or safety considerations, it's a tough question, but you said you would know what to do. Okay.
No, I do the best I could under the circumstances.
Okay. Thank you, Captain Murphy. Appreciate your time and testimony. I'd like to call the next witness, Mr. Harry L. Clare.
Dickinson. He's now calling the helmsman.
Who was the 8 to midnight helmsman on the Exxon Valdez.
Harry Clare is now being sworn. We've just heard from William Murphy, the pilot. He pretty well defended Joe Hazelwood, although he admitted that there was a period in which Joe was assigned to the East Coast, and he really didn't have any knowledge of his behavior then. Said this was the first time he had ever smelled alcohol in his breath.
Very clear.
By whom are you employed?
Exxon Shipping.
How long have you been employed by Exxon Shipping?
A year and a half.
Do you have any documents or licenses that qualify you for your position?
Yes, I have a Z-card, my seaman's document from the Coast Guard. Mm-hmm.
And how long have you had this?
Since 77.
All right, sir. Mr. Kacharian?
Mr. Clare, on the Exxon Valdez, do you know how to put the steering console into automatic steering?
Yes, sir.
That from hand?
From hand to gyro, yes.
Okay. How do you do it?
Well, you just push a button.
Do you have to dial in a course and then?
Well, you steady up on the course. Come steady on the course and then just push the gyro button.
Okay. If the master or the mate on the watch wants you to go into automatic steering, who activates the automatic feature? Is it you? Or is it him?
Normally, it's the mate.
So you really don't have to know how to do it yourself?
It's not that difficult.
Okay. What about going the opposite way from automatic steering to hand steering? What do you have to do?
There's a button to push. And the mate usually does that also.
Oh, is that right? Do you know if it takes a lot of force to actuate that button, or is it?
I couldn't say whether it takes a lot of force.
About how many trips have you made to Valdez on the Exxon Valdez and other vessels into the city of Valdez?
A half a dozen, eight, I don't know.
During these trips, was it common practice to put the helm in automatic or gyro steering?
Where?
In the Sound, in Prince William
Sound.
No. Now, when you're on lookout coming in Prince William Sound, where is the normal position for the lookout to be stationed?
Well, normally it's on the bow.
On the bow. Have you ever been moved up to the bridge wing as lookout?
I don't recall.
Have you sailed with Captain Hazelwood before this trip?
No.
This was your first trip with him?
Yes.
Now, when you were in Prince William Sound with Captain Hazelwood, did he stay on the bridge the whole time when you were on watch?
Did he stay
in
there?
In general, yeah.
Yes.
I'll get more specific later.
Yes.
Is there any protected area to stand lookout when you're on the bow of the Exxon Valdez?
You mean is something set up specifically for lookout?
Right.
No.
Okay. How do you communicate with the wheelhouse when you're on lookout?
With a handheld radio.
How long is a normal tour on the Exxon Valdez or Exxon vessels?
Well, you mean from?
Do you stay on for 6 months, 3 months?
It's normal. It's supposed to be 2 months.
2 months on. How much time off?
38 days.
Okay, now I'd like to get to the evening of March 23rd, the evening of the accident. Could you describe the events during your watch, what took place that night, starting with the time you went on watch?
We were called out a little early. I believe it was at 1920 or 1925 to start securing a deck for sea. And we secured the deck for sea. I was on the bow when we cast off our lines, and I remained on the bow until 10:30, 22:30.
Okay.
And at that time, I took a break, relieved Paul Radke on the helm.
Okay. When you went up to lookout, were you given any instructions to look for any objects or given any special guidelines?
No.
Did you report any lights to the wheelhouse?
Yes.
What lights did you report?
I don't know which ones they were. They were just lights.
Do you see any vessels while you were going out?
I don't recall seeing any vessels.
Now, how long normally is a watch on the lookout?
Normally 2 hours.
You stay 2 hours on and 2 hours off?
2 hours on lookout and 2 hours on the wheel.
Okay. Now, you said you came off lookout and you took a break before you relieved Mr. Radke, is that correct?
Right.
How long was that break? What did you do?
20 minutes. I went and sat and had a drink and took my wet clothes off.
Okay. Now, was there any, the lookout spot on the bow was unattended for that 20 minutes, is that correct?
Right.
Was that normal for the changing of the watch?
Yes.
What was the visibility when you were on the bow?
It wasn't especially good. It was kind of snowing.
There wasn't any moon or any other lights?
No.
Okay, after getting, taking a break and going to the wheelhouse, what do you do to relieve the helmsman?
I just go up, find out. He tells me what course he's steering. We repeat the course to the mate or the master, whoever happens to be up there, and I take the wheel.
Okay. About what time did you get up into the wheelhouse that day?
22:50.
What course were you on, do you remember?
We were coming to course 219. We hadn't quite studied up on it. I studied up on it after I took the wheel.
Okay. Now, who was in the wheelhouse when you got there? Could you see?
Paul, my watch partner, the pilot, and the third mate.
You didn't see the captain?
No, I didn't.
And how was the steering? Was it in hand or automatic?
It was in hand.
Now, the pilot had to get off the ship. Was there any conversation between the pilot and the third mate as to getting the master up on the bridge?
I don't recall any.
You didn't hear anything?
No.
Did you see the captain come up to the bridge before the pilot left?
Yes.
And how was he acting when he got up on the bridge?
Normal.
Did you get close to him at any time?
No.
Normally, where was the pilot standing when you were on the helm?
Well, he was standing forward of the console next to the forward windows.
Okay. When the pilot was getting ready to relieve, did you notice if there were any course changes, speed changes?
I don't recall.
When the captain came up to the bridge, what did the third mate do with the pilot?
I don't understand.
Did he escort him below, or did the pilot go down by himself? Or?
When the pilot left the ship, the third mate went down with him.
Okay. Do you know if the lookout, Mr. Radke, was called to assist?
Yes, he was.
Did you hear that conversation?
No, I didn't.
But that's your understanding, it's a normal practice.
Yes.
Okay, after the pilot left the ship that night, what took place in the wheelhouse? Did you have any course changes? Did the mate come back up?
The mate came back up, and we had two course changes.
What were those course changes?
200 and 180.
Was the third mate in the wheelhouse when that 200 course change was made?
I don't know.
Do you know he was there with the 180 course change?
No, I don't know.
Did you hear any radio communications between the captain and the Coast Guard concerning ICE?
I remember something mentioned about ICE, and that was about it. I don't remember the entire conversation.
Mm-hmm. Were you given any course change after that radio conversation between the captain and the Coast Guard?
I don't know whether it was prior to the course changes or after the course changes.
Did you have to call the next watch?
I don't think I had to, but I did.
You did? Do you call the ABs and the next mate, or just the ABs?
Just the ABs.
Is that your normal practice?
Yes.
Does the mate normally call the next mate on for his relief?
Yes.
Just before you were leave, was there another course change?
No.
We had 219, 200, and was there another one?
180.
Okay. Now, when you were told, who told you to go to 180?
The captain.
Okay. Did he give you